This is not a story about taxes. It's a story about a trap that backfires, a trap set to deal with authority. And every time we go near the question of taxes ourselves, we spring the trap. The trap is creative and devious and very, very dangerous. It's also simple and elegant, like a mouse trap. It's a simple mechanism, really, you know. But it has a cunning purpose. This trap they've set for Jesus is just as simple. Some of the disciples of the Pharisees and followers of King Herod set up a simple binary choice, two options. It's either one thing or it's the other. It's easy enough. Just answer the question, Jesus. We can almost hear them salivate like gotcha journalists. All we need is a yes or no. That's all. Yes, no. The elegance of their handiwork is found in how that it guides Jesus straight into the trap. As both paths he gets lead really to the same place. Right? So it's a false choice. If Jesus goes one way, he will be discredited as a false prophet. And if he goes the other way, he will be condemned as a traitor. Both answers get him out of the way. Jesus is their prey. They have set the trap so that there will be no way out. No way if Jesus follows their script. But he doesn't. And he lures them into their own trap. Now, the decision that the Pharisees and the Herodians hope Jesus will make is based out of this Jewish relationship to their occupiers. Right? So it's really important for us to remember the context, because for them, there is no separation of church and state, not for first century Jews in Jerusalem. Herod is their God-appointed king, now, even if he isn't seen as a credible authority by many of his subjects. But nevertheless, God is responsible for this authority, church-state mixed. Now, they also are living under occupation by Rome. That's a different story, right? An empire clearly not led by God, not by their God. And worse, it's an empire that demands its emperor be worshipped as a god, right? Replacing, superseding, above their own God of Israel. The God that liberated them from Egypt, gave them a home, and gave them David. A God that saved them from Babylon and led them to build and then rebuild the temple, right? Their God, who's responsible for all these things, is supposed to play second fiddle to some guy with a lot of soldiers. It would be very tempting to see separation here and see Jesus's response to this person, these people coming to him, as prudent. We might hear, give therefore to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, as if he actually said, yes. Yes. Pay your taxes. As if the second sentence were, your God will still love you if you are stuck doing what you have to do to survive, right? But he doesn't say that. He doesn't. I know. That's crazy. because he's not talking about taxes. Instead, he deals with the sense of separation. Can there even be things that are not God's? Now, the trap the disciples of the Pharisees and the servants of Herod set for Jesus goes off for us the second we start to deal with this question of taxes in precisely the way they intend Jesus to. That's what usually happens when we go here, is we get stuck. Right? In other words, when we read this text, get to this question about taxes, and then say, well, they have a point. Jesus, what are we supposed to do about our taxes? When we get there, we're already in the trap. Because we're at that same crossroads. Because are we going to be asking Jesus that, looking for an honest response? Or will we punish Jesus for the response that we receive? Our own problem, then, is to deal with this expectation that we have that Jesus presents a gospel that is easy. That Jesus' teaching will lead us to simple solutions that dovetail nicely with the way the world already is. How convenient. With the way we're used to doing things, and even with the things, dare I say, we've been taught in church. Our own problem is that. But instead, we might follow Jesus' example. Maybe we can turn into the challenge the way a driver turns into a skid on icy roads. Stanley Hauerwas writes, "You know you have a problem, at least if you're a disciple of Jesus, when you do not have a problem." The trap set for Jesus was created out of dishonesty. These people try to butter up Jesus with flattery, calling him sincere and honest. They hear that he is supportive and impartial, so they try to trick him dishonestly. Jesus, on the other hand, deals with them directly and honestly. With them directly and honestly, not their question. The Mennonite pastor Michael Danner writes, "How do we answer dishonest questions? Honestly. That is what Jesus does. An honest answer to a dishonest question addresses the whole picture. It refuses to accept the ruse. It says, 'You hypocrites, why are you trying to trap me?' Then it reveals, it uncovers, it lays bare, and it does something else. It creates space for an honest dialogue to occur around a good question." The story we received of Jesus, this question and this coin, is at its roots about honesty. It's about the way we are when we get together and how we approach each other. It's about respect and getting rid of our suspicion. It's about dealing with issues directly and openly. But most importantly, it is about relationship. Because just a few moments later in this story, Jesus will be asked, "What is the greatest commandment?" And we know what that is. He is going to say exactly this. He's going to say, it's relationship. Love, not some abstract concept or construct we call love, not something that we claim we do or have or sense or feel, but the love that we give to God and to our neighbors. That's love. And that's, in a sense, about relationship. So our greatest commandment is essentially to be in a healthy relationship with God and with one another. It's only when we are honest with one another in healthy community that we can even begin to start addressing that question in the first place, that we might rehabilitate it. Because it is a good question. It's just told with malice and ill intent to judge and condemn. But instead, if we can get there, we can begin to ask not only that question, but questions of financial health and our future and living into our hopes and dreams. So may we continue to build those healthy relationships. May we build healthy space in this community and in our lives. And may we become open, more open, to honestly wrestling with these hard questions of our faith.